Act 2. 23. Exterior. The town dock. Very late afternoon. Well, where the town dock used to be. The tide is rising again, and monster waves pound at the shore. We see overturned boats, splintered lobster traps, shattered chunks of piling, tattered skeins of netting. 24. Exterior. The headland. Very late afternoon. The ocean ebbs and flows over the fallen lighthouse. One wave rolls in and deposits something beside the shattered circular window of the control room. 25. Exterior. Outside the control room. Late afternoon. It's the waterlogged body of old George Kirby. There's a growing roar as the next wave comes in and pulls the body away. 26. Exterior. The business section of town. Late afternoon. The storm is still howling away, and now the business buildings are buried halfway to the tops of their show windows. 27. Interior. The drugstore. Late afternoon. The show windows are all shattered, the holes filled with avalanches of snow that stretch halfway down the aisles. 28. Interior. The hardware store. Late afternoon. Like the drugstore, the aisles are full of snow. Near the cash registers is a display of lawnmowers buried to their gas caps in snow. The sign in front of them is barely readable. Lawnmower sale. Gear up for summer now. 29. Interior. The island beauty shop. It's also full of snow. The hair dryers stand like frozen Martians. Written across the mirror is, "Give me what I want, and I'll go away." 30. Exterior, the town hall, late afternoon. We can barely see it, partially because of the screaming blizzard, but mostly because night is getting ready to fall. 31. Interior, the basement daycare area, late afternoon. The kids are sitting in a circle. In the middle is Cat Withers, reading a book called The Little Puppy, a great favorite of Danny Torrance's once upon a time. Cat.
So, the little puppy said, "I know where my ball must be." That mean little boy put it in his pocket and took it away, but I can find it because my nose is...
Sally Godso sings,
"I'm a little teapot."
Cat.
Sally, honey, you shouldn't be singing now. This is story time.
Cat's a little freaked, although she can't quite remember what it is about that nonsense ditty that is so unpleasant. Sally pays no attention to her in any case, goes right on singing. Ralphie joins in. Heidi adds her voice, then Buster and Pippa, Frank Bright and Harry Robichaud do the same. Soon all the children are singing, even Don Beals. Kids.
Short and stout.
They stand up. They show their handles and spouts at the appropriate moments. Cat looks at them with growing unease. Joanna Stanhope, Molly, and Melinda Hatcher join her. Melinda.
What's going on?
Cat.
I don't know. I guess they want to sing.
Kids.
Here is my handle. Here is my spout. You can pick me up and pour me out. I'm a little teapot, short and stout.
Molly doesn't like it. There's a shelf with a few books on it to her right. Also on it is the chamois bag with the marbles in it. Molly glances at this, then goes quietly upstairs. 32. Interior. The town meeting hall. Afternoon. Angie Carver is sitting on one of the front benches. She has been bundled into a warm, quilted housecoat, and there's a towel over her wet hair. Jack sits solicitously beside her, helping her with a cup of steaming broth. She can't seem to manage it herself because her hands are shaking badly. Sitting on the edge of the stage, facing her, is Mike Anderson. Behind them, on the other benches, and on the edge of their seats, you could say, are most of Little Tall's storm refugees. Hatch weaves his way to the front among them and sits down next to Mike. Hatch looks pretty well exhausted. Hatch, eyeing the onlookers, "You want me to move them out?" Mike, "Think you could?" He's got a point, and Hatch knows it. Molly comes in, slips through the crowd, goes to Mike, and sits beside him on the stage, attempting to have a private moment in a very public place. Molly, low.
"The kids are acting funny."
Mike, also low. "Funny how?" Molly.
Same. Cat was reading them a story, and they just stood up and started singing.
Sees Mike's puzzlement.
I know it doesn't sound like much.
Mike. If you say it's funny, it's funny. I'll come and take a look as soon as I finish here. He tips his eyes in Angie's direction. Angie speaks, but not to Mike or Jack or anyone in particular. Angie.
Now I know how easy it is to just get yanked out of the world. I wish I didn't, but I do.
Jack offers her the cup of broth again, but when Angie puts her hands on it, they're shaking so badly she spills it and cries out when the liquid scalds her. Molly takes a handkerchief from her pocket, sits down beside her, and wipes the hot broth from her fingers. Angie looks at her gratefully and takes Molly's hand. She grips it hard. It's comfort she needs, not a cleanup. Angie.
I was just standing there, you see, watching the lighthouse. And then I was his.
Molly.
Shh, it's over.
Angie.
I feel like I'll never be warm again. I've burned my fingers, see? They're red, but they're still cold. I feel like he turned me to snow.
Molly.
Mike's got to ask you some questions, but it doesn't have to be here. Do you want to go somewhere more private? Because you can if you want to.
She looks to Mike for confirmation, and Mike nods. Angie, meanwhile, gathers herself with an effort. Angie.
No. This is for everyone. Everyone should hear.
Fascinated and frightened at the same time, the islanders move in closer. Reverend Bob Riggins. What happened to you, Angie Carver? During what follows, the camera pushes slowly in on Angie, moving to close-up. Intercut with this, let us see as many islander faces as possible. On each, we see the horror, the terror, and the growing belief in what she's saying, strange as it is. There are supposedly no atheists in the foxholes, and maybe no disbelievers when the storm of the century is huffing and puffing and threatening to blow the house down. This is a quasi-religious experience, and by the end, we see one solidified idea that really doesn't need verbal expression. When Linoge shows up, they'll give it to him. Whatever it is he wants, they will give it to him. Aya, deal, showa, as the islanders themselves might say.
Angie. We were watching the lighthouse fall down. And then I went flying backward into the snow. At first I thought it was somebody's idea of a joke, but then I turned around, and what had me? It wasn't a man. It wore a man's clothes and had a man's face, but there was just blackness where its eyes should have been. Blackness and little red twisting things like snakes on fire. And when it smiled at me, I saw its teeth. I fainted. First time in my life, I fainted.
She sips from the cup. The room is completely silent. Molly and Jack sit with their arms around her. Angie is still clutching Molly's hand. Angie.
When I came to, I was flying. I know that sounds crazy, but it's true. Me and George Kirby, we were both flying. It was like Peter Pan with me as Wendy and old George as John. That thing had us, one under each arm. And right ahead of us, as it was leading us or holding us up, there was a cane, a black cane with a silver wolf's head. As fast as we flew, that cane always stayed ahead of us.
Mike and Hatch lock eyes. Angie continues.
It was the island we saw. The storm was over and the sun was out, but there were cops on snowmobiles everywhere. Mainland cops, state cops, even game wardens. News people, too, from the local stations and the networks. They were all looking for us, only we were gone. Gone where nobody could ever find us.
Orv Boucher.
Like in the dreams.
Angie.
Yes, like that. Then it got dark again. At first I thought it was night, but it wasn't. It was the storm clouds. They were back, and the sunshine was gone. Pretty soon it started snowing again, and I understood what was happening. I said, you showed us the future, didn't you? like the last ghost showed Mr. Scrooge the future in A Christmas Carol. And he said, "Yes'm, that's very smart of you. Now you best hang on tight." We started to go up, and the snow got thicker, and old George started to cry and talk about how he couldn't stand it because of his arthritis. He had to get down, although it wasn't cold a bit. At least, it didn't seem that way to me. And then the man laughed and said that was fine. George could go down right away if he wanted to, and by the express route, too, because he only needed one of us, really, to come back and tell. We were just going into the clouds by then.
Jonas Stanhope.
It was a dream, Angie. It must have been.
Angie.
I tell you, it wasn't. I could feel the clouds. Not cold the way you'd think snow clouds would be, but damp, like wet cotton.
And George saw what it meant to do, and he screamed, but the thing that had us opened its right arm, it had me in its left, and... 33. Exterior. Old George Kirby. Night. He falls away from the camera, screaming and waving his arms. He disappears into the dark and the snow. 34. Exterior. Resume Angie and the gathered islanders. Late afternoon. Jack.
Then what happened?
Angie.
He told me he was bringing me back. Back through time and back through the storm. He was letting me live to tell you, to tell everyone, that we have to give him what he wants when he comes tonight.
Robbie.
If we have something this man Linoge wants, why doesn't he just take it?
Angie.
I don't think he can. I think we have to give it to him.
Pause.
He told me to tell you that he'll only ask once. He asked me if I'd remember Roanoke and Croatan, and that he'll only ask once. And I said yes, because I knew if I said no, or even asked him to explain anything, he'd drop me the way he dropped George. He didn't have to tell me. I just knew. And we stopped going up. We did a rollover in the air, and my stomach went way up in my throat like it was a county fair carnival ride we were on instead of being way up in the air. And I fainted again, I guess. Or maybe he did something to me. I don't know. The next thing I was sure of, I was stumbling around in the snow, the whiteout, and I could hear a horn. I thought the lighthouse must not have blown down after all, because I can hear the foghorn. I tried to go toward it, and I saw someone coming out of the snow, and I thought it was him. Him again, meaning to take me back into the air again. Only this time he dropped me, and I tried to run, but it was you, Jack. It was you.
She puts her head against his shoulder, exhausted by the effort this has taken. There is a beat of silence, then... Jill Robichaud, shrill.
Why us? Why us?
Several beats of silence, then... Tavia Godso.
Maybe because he knows we can keep a secret.
35. Interior. The basement daycare area, late afternoon. Kids. Saying,
I'm a little teapot, short and stout.
Cat Withers is still standing in the middle of the circle, holding her place in the little puppy. We can see that she's freaked, but is trying to hide this from the kids. Melinda and Joanna are still on the stairs. Now joining them is Kirk Freeman, still dressed for outdoors and with a pile of the toys and puzzles he and Mike picked up at Wee Folks. Cat.
If you want to sing, kids, maybe we could sing something else for a change. London Bridge, or The Farmer in the Dell, or...
She gives up. They're not listening. They hardly seem there. Once normal, happy preschool children, they have become spookily distant. Kids, sing.
Here's my handle. Here is my spout. You can pick...
They stop on the word pick, and they do it all at the same time, as neat as a lock of hair snipped by a barber's shears. Now they just stand in a circle around Cat. Kirk.
I brought these games and...
What?
What's going on?
36. Interior. Cat and the children. Closer. Late afternoon.
Oh, this is freaky. She looks from one to the next, and the normal,
vivacity of young children has left their faces. They are Cult City, eyes like big zeros, just standing there. Cat.
Buster?
No answer.
Heidi?
No answer.
Pippa?
No answer.
Ralphie, are you all right?
No answer. Melinda Hatcher hurries into the circle, almost knocking Sally Godsaw and Harry Robichaud over. She kneels by Pippa and grabs her arms. Melinda.
Pippa, what's wrong, honey?
Cat bursts out of the circle. She's had enough. 37. Interior, on the stairs with Cat, Joanna, and Kirk Freeman. Kirk.
What is it? What's wrong with them?
Cat, starting to cry.
I don't know. But their eyes. Oh, God, there's nothing there.
38. Interior, Melinda and Pippa, close up. Cat is right. Pippa's eyes are scary in their emptiness, and although her mother shakes her harder and harder, this is panic, not anger. There is no result. Melinda.
Pippa, wake up. Wake up.
She tries chafing Pippa's hands. No result. She looks around wildly. Melinda.
All of you, wake up.
39. Interior. Ralphie, close up. His head turns a little, and the life comes back into his eyes. He smiles. It's almost as if he's heard her and is responding, except he's not even looking in Melinda's direction. Ralphie.
Look!
He points toward the shelf with the bag of marbles on it. 40. Interior, the basement daycare center, late afternoon. Everyone looks. The kids light up just as Ralphie did. What are they looking at that pleases them so? The marbles? No, that doesn't seem to be it. Their eyes are fixed a little lower, but there's nothing there. Heidi, delighted.
It's got a doggy head. A silver doggy head. How cool.
Cat suddenly understands and is horrified. Cat to Kirk. Go get Mike. Joanna Stanhope.
I don't understand. What?
Cat.
Right now.
Kirk turns and does what she says, dropping the games and puzzles heedlessly on the stairs. 41. Interior. Don Beals, close up. Don.
A doggy head. Yeah.
42. Interior, the shelf, from Don's point of view. Hanging from the shelf is Linoge's cane. The silver snarling wolf's head is now a friendly, grinning St. Bernard. 43. Interior, resume, the circle of kids. Melinda still kneels in front of Pippa, but Pippa is looking over her head, like the others. Pippa.
A doggy! A doggy!
Bewildered and afraid, Melinda turns to look. Nothing there. 44. Interior, the town meeting hall, late afternoon. Mike is just getting up from the stage. The interview with Angela is over. Mike to Jack. Why don't you see if you can get her to lie down for a little while? Jack.
That's a good...
Kirk comes bursting through the clustered islanders. Kirk.
Mike! Mike, there's something wrong with the kids.
Frightened murmurs from the islanders, but... some do more than just murmur. Jill and Andy, Mike and Molly, Robbie and Sandy, the Brights, Hatch, Ursula. The parents bolt for the stairs. Angie, as if waking up.
Buster? Is something wrong with Buster? Buster! Buster!
She is up in a flash, knocking the cup of broth from Jack's hand. Jack.
Honey, wait!
Angie ignores him.
Buster!
45. Interior. Buster, close up. He breaks from the circle and runs to the shelf, where the cane hangs by the crook of its neck. He touches it, and crumples to the floor as if shot. 46. Interior. The daycare area, wider. Late afternoon. The rest of the children follow Buster's lead. They are laughing and excited, like kids who have just been given free all-day passes to Disneyland. They reach out to thin air, or to something only they can see, and one by one crumple to the floor, joining Buster. Cat.
No! Don't let them!
A gaggle of frightened parents, led by Jill and Andy, appear at the head of the stairs. Robbie.
Get out of my way!
He shoves Jill aside. Would have knocked her right downstairs if not for Andy's last-second grab, and goes pelting down to the basement. Cat ignores all this and runs across the room. Harry Robichaud touches thin air and falls down with the others. Now there's only Ralphie Anderson and Pippa, who is back where the circle was. Pippa is struggling in her mother's grip. Cat grabs Ralphie and pulls him back as he reaches up to touch, well, to touch whatever it is he sees. Pippa.
Let me go! Wanna see doggy! Wanna see doggy!
47. Interior. Cat and Ralphie, close up. Cat doesn't see the cane hanging down from the shelf, but in this shot we do, and Ralphie does too. He reaches for it, almost touches it, and Cat pulls him back out of reach. Cat.
Ralphie, what do you see?
Ralphie, struggling wildly.
Let me go! Let me go!
He reaches again. Cat pulls him back again. And then Robbie Beals comes cannonading into her, wanting only to reach Don, who is lying in the pile of tangled limbs with his eyes closed and donut crumbs still on his mouth. Cat, meanwhile, loses her grip on Ralphie and goes sprawling. Robbie, to his knees.
Donnie!
Ralphie is free. He lunges forward and touches the cane. For a moment, we see a deep and perfect bliss on his face. Ralphie.
Neat!
His eyes roll up to whites and he sprawls with the others. 48. Interior. Pippa and Melinda, close up. Pippa is now the only child left. She struggles furiously with her mother, tearing her shirt in her efforts to get free, her eyes continually turning to the area above the tangle of kids. Melinda.
Pippa. Pippa, no.
Pippa.
Let me go.
Hatch comes pelting down the stairs and runs toward his wife and his daughter. Hatch.
Pippa, what's wrong?
Melinda turns some of her attention toward her husband. A bad mistake. Pippa's sweet little face twists into an expression of rage, and she claws at her mother's cheek, drawing blood in three lines.
Pippa, let me go, you bitch!
Stunned both by the pain and by the word her daughter has used, Melinda loosens her grip. Only a little, and only for a moment, but it's enough. Pippa tears out of her grasp and races across the room. Hatch.
Honey, no!
He goes after her. 49. Interior. Pippa, close up. Hatch loses the race. Pippa touches the cane an instant before he can grab her around the waist. We see that same blissful expression on her face, and then she swoons away with the others. Hatch.
No. No. No!
He picks her up in his arms, looks at the place where her hand touched, and sees nothing but thin air. He turns around with her, unbelieving. 50. Interior. The basement of the town hall. Late afternoon. Total pandemonium, as choreographed by our fearless director. Rains, as islanders continue to push down the stairs and crowd into the makeshift daycare space. The dominant note is confused terror. Robbie is shaking Donnie, trying to wake him up. Hatch stands up with Pippa in his arms, beginning to weep. Mike pushes through the cluster of people at the foot of the stairs and looks with unbelief at the tangle of tiny bodies. Della Bissonette.
They're dead. He's killed them.
Ursula.
No. Oh, God, please, no. Not Sally. Not my Sally.
She pushes her way through the people in her way, actually knocking a couple of them over. She is maddened with grief and terror. This lady lost her husband just the day before, remember? Shoving down the stairs, almost moshing down the stairs, comes Andy Robichaud, dragging Jill by the hand. Andy knocks old Bert Soames down on the stairs. There's a crunch as Bert's arm breaks. The old guy screams with pain. Betty Soames, shrieking.
You're trampling him! Stop! You're killing him!
Andy and Jill take no notice. They don't care about Bert Soames. They care about Harry, who is lying with the others. Meanwhile, Della's hysterical cry has been picked up by the others, and it jumps from person to person like a virulent flu germ. They're dead. The kids are dead. Winoge has somehow killed the children. 51. Interior. Mike, Molly, Ralphie. As Molly arrives, crying with terror, Mike is gently lifting Ralphie into a sitting position and dropping one ear to the boy's face and chest. Molly.
Is he?
Mike takes her hand and holds it in front of Ralphie's nose and mouth. She feels his breath going in and out. An expression of deep relief comes over her face. Her shoulders sag. Molly.
Thank God. Is he asleep, or...
Mike. I don't know. He scoops Ralph into his arms and stands up. 52. Interior. The basement. Daycare area. Angle on the stairs. Robbie has Donnie in his arms now. He runs for the stairs, with his bewildered, terrified wife tumbling along in his wake. His way is blocked by the Soameses. Betty is just helping Bert to his feet. Also nearby are Johnny Harriman, Sonny Brodigan, and Upton Bell. But the Soameses, unlucky parents of the late Billy, are Robbie's first obstacle. Robbie, no great diplomat he.
Out of my way!
He shoves Bert, whose broken arm smashes against the side of the stairs. Bert screams again, and Betty grabs him again. Johnny, outraged, blocks Robbie's path. Johnny Harriman.
Hear, hear now. That's an old man you're pushing around. Where do you think you're going, anyway?
Robbie.
Let me by. I have to get him to a doctor.
Sonny.
Good luck to you, Robbie Beals. Closest one's across the reach in Machias, and the wind's blowing a hurricane.
Robbie looks at him, wide-eyed, some semblance of sanity dawning. Sonny is right, of course. Sandra joins Robbie and brushes Donnie's hair gently back from his brow. Betty Soames, hugging her weeping husband, glares at them. 53. Interior. The basement. Daycare area. Angle on the Andersons. Mike is aware of the panic in the parents, which is bad, and the panic of the Islanders in general, which could be even worse. He draws in a deep breath and lets loose the loudest shout he can manage. Mike.
Everybody, just shut up!
Some people in their immediate vicinity quiet down, and that quiet spreads outward. Only Robbie Beals doesn't turn toward the constable, and by now, that shouldn't much surprise us. Robbie.
Where's Ferd? He's got EMT training, at least. Ferd Andrews, where the hell are you?
Ferd, lost in the back of the crowd.
Here.
We see him struggling to get through. Robbie.
Get your ass down here. Folks, let him pass. My boy.
Hatch.
That's enough. Shut up.
Robbie.
Don't you tell me to shut up, fatso. I've had all the crap out of you I'm going to take.
Two men face each other, each with an unconscious child in his arms, but ready to brawl just the same. Mike.
Stop it. Both of you.
Robbie, I don't think Don's in any immediate danger, or Pippa, or Ralphie, or any of them. Ursula has been kneeling over Sally, keening to her. Now, Molly whispers something in her ear, and Ursula stands up. Mary Hopewell.
Then, they're not dead.
The Islanders are all quiet now, watching and hoping. Andy has got his son Harry in his arms. Jill is standing next to them. Nearby, Jack is holding Buster, while his wife, the haggard, newly gray-haired Angie, kisses the boy's cheek and whispers in his ear. Andy.
I think he's sleeping.
Ursula.
This isn't sleep. If they were asleep, we could wake them up.
Ferd, finally at the front of the crowd.
Then what is it?
Mike.
I don't know.
He looks down into Ralphie's serene face, as if trying to read whatever is happening behind the boy's closed eyes. The camera follows his gaze, moving in and in on Ralphie's face, from medium shot to close-up, from close-up to extreme close-up. And as he does, we slowly dissolve to 54. Exterior. Blue sky, white clouds, day. The sky above is that deep, penetrating blue that we see only from airplanes. We are at about 22,000 feet above the surface of the Earth. Below us, at 21,000 or so, is a wide deck of cloud, an enormous ballroom floor in the sky. We can see tendrils of cloud smoking off the top of this deck and into the blue. Up where we are, all is sunlit and serene. Below, still driving like hell, is the storm of the century. A V-shape becomes visible through the clouds, grayish against the white. It's like watching a submarine running just below the surface, or a plane about to break into the clear. You'd think plane, given our location, but it isn't. The V-shape rises out of the clouds. At the tip of the V is Linoge, dressed in his watch cap, pea coat, blue jeans, and yellow gloves. Ahead of him, leading the way like a lodestar, is the cane. Linoge holds his hands out to either side, slightly spread. Clinging to one is Pippa Hatcher. Clinging to the other is Ralphie Anderson. Clinging to the hands of these two are Heidi and Buster. Clinging to Heidi's and Buster's are Sally and Don. Clinging to their hands and bringing up the rear are Harry and little Frank Bright. Their hair flies back from their foreheads. Their clothes ripple. They are totally blissed out. Linoge calls back.
Having fun, kids?
Kids.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. This is great.
Etc. 55. Exterior. Linoge, close up. His eyes are black, shot with twisting red veins. When he smiles, he once more reveals those sharpened fangs. The shadow of the cane lies on his face like a scar. The kids think they have gone flying with a fabulous friend. We know the truth. They are in the grip of a monster. Fade to black. This ends Act 2.